afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 102nd edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Alban Mainon. He was born and raised in Bourges, France, except for the 6 years when his family lived in Lagos, Nigeria. Bourges is a small city in central France and is the exact population of Portland, Maine, while Lagos, Nigeria is now 16 million people. I'm looking forward to hearing more about your impressions of both places today and from a child's eye view as well. So thank you for joining me in the studio today, Alban.
Thank you, Kate, for having me.
So let's get started in Bourges, France. What can you tell listeners about your beautiful city?
I want to say hello in French to all your listeners.
Oh, please do.
Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Yes, Bourges is the city where I was born, approximately, you're right, the size of Portland. And it's located in the middle of France. It's very close to the beautiful Loire Valley region with all the castles that most people refer to. And it's one of the oldest town in France. It was actually named Avaricum. It was the capital of the Gaul in France some 2,000 years ago. So it's an old town. Epic battles took place between Caesars and Vercingetorix there. And we have an incredible, beautiful, massive cathedral, La Cathédrale Saint-Étienne, with the most recognized stained glass windows all over France.
And flying buttresses.
That's right, all over.
It's, when you think cathedral... Yeah. You think of Saint-Étienne.
Yeah, Saint-Étienne. Yeah, there. I mean, Reims and Saint-Étienne are probably the two most incredible cathedrals in France. But nowadays, Bourges is known for the most important music festival in France called Le Printemps de Bourges. Translated as the Spring of Bourges, has been happening for 40 years. And for 1 week, musicians from all over the world gather and transform the town in a gigantic concert mecca. It's and the music is very eclectic, from rock to electronic music to world-famous musicians. And sometimes we have as many as 25 concerts happening simultaneously in incredible venues, such as the Palais Jacques Coeur, the Palace of Jack of Hearts, La Cathédrale, the concert hall with 5,000 teenagers, and for an entire night of electronic music.
I have to say, I really like the idea of 5,000 kids listening to electronic music in a giant cathedral.
You know, I've done that for the past 10 years. I never miss one because it's just incredible to see the youth jumping up and down and to get in the middle of that excitement. And there's a different DJ every other hours and they move from one place to another. I just get the shivers just thinking about it every time. And to see that the power of the youth and the evolution of music over the past 30 years, I attended the Printemps de Bourges as a journalist for over 30 years and documented it. All my friends wants to come with me. And I said, no, I need to be alone to really scavenge and navigate, you know, with the moon. I mean, last year I interviewed Patti Smith and Styx and musicians from everywhere. And this festival really has been the thriving force of my life for many, many years. Yeah.
I can see why you have a passion for music.
Yes.
And what could be more amazing than, did you say like 25 concerts simultaneously going on?
Yes, it starts on Tuesdays, generally probably the end of April, first week of May, and then goes up until Sunday. And about 10 years ago, the festival had a logistic budget problem. And so all the bars and pubs and local restaurants decided to take over and do a festival off, and that never stopped. So not only you have 25 venues that are official venues in different areas of the town, but you also have the entire town who is transforming itself into a gigantic musical venue. So yeah, it's live and people everywhere walking. It's fantastic.
That sounds wonderful. So can you explain why your family left France for Lagos, Nigeria when you were a four-year-old?
Yes, my father was supposed to take over my Italian grandfather's business and construction in Bourges, but my grandfather thought there was no future for a small 10-people business in the early 70s. So my dad went to work with a cousin in Lagos and building skyscrapers and eventually moved his family there for several years. So I did grow up in the humidity and heat of the equator, which is a unique sensation, really, and one of the strongest memories of my childhood. And Lagos, at the time, was also a very dangerous city and very polluted town. I mean, it's, you mentioned 16 million. I think we're closest to 21 million now. And it's the largest city in Nigeria, but also in on the African continent, and very a dangerous place to grow up. But I only have fond memories of it.
Yeah. My understanding is that 1 in 4 Africans is from Nigeria.
Yeah.
The population is so large in Nigeria.
Right. Yes, yes.
So when you talk about Lagos, you seem to have a soft home feeling around it. And you mentioned playing in the streets with your friends. I wondered if you could tell us more about what your daily life looked like as a family there and what you were playing.
Well, just like any kids in the world, I mean, we're all the same. We love to play soccer and with anything that we could find, you know, an empty can of soda or an old deflated ball, anything. But I remember sitting with my brother Florian and playing shop, selling lemonades and matches and all sorts of stuff, you know, to the Wash Knights. The Wash Knights, their figure in my childhood, essentially, they were the guards protecting the houses at night, and we didn't have much traffic. But, you know, I was just like a little kid, and I think kids are the same anywhere in the world, whether they're in Lagos or in Portland, Maine, or Paris in the streets. We all do the same thing, don't we?
We like to play.
That's right.
And learn so much from our playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then your family returned to Bourges, where you attended high school and then college, studying international business. And when did you first come to the United States?
Well, that's a very different part of my life. I arrived in the States. Love brought me here, and love keeps me here since 27 years now. I kept coming back, and I arrived after I graduated from high school when I was 17 years old, and graduated from a John Jay High School here in New York State. And I was fascinated immediately by the landscape of Northern America, and being so used to cultivated land where I come from, I immediately fell in love with the wilderness and the outdoors here. So it was, I think it was 89 when I came and spent a couple of years in New York, and then I met an artist from Maine, Pamela Moulton, who actually is Maine's Arts Commission, voted her the Maine Visual Art Fellow this year. And for the past 20 years, together we shared our time between a small village in the Loire Valley called Pont-le-Voix, surrounded again by all the world's renowned chateaux, Chenonceau. I don't know if you've been there, Kate, but the Chambord, Chaumont, I invite everyone to go.
Sounds great.
And Swan's Island on the coast of Acadia. Yeah, actually, you know, we still have a charming artist home in France. It's available for rent. So any of you listeners would like a holiday getaway in a small, beautiful village with a 1,000-year-old abbey and sip delicious French white wine and goat cheese, you should get in touch and we'll arrange that. And but anyway, the rest is history. I summered for 17 years now on the beautiful coast of Acadia on Swan's Island, right after we discovered the Sweet Chariot Music Festival. Do you know about the Sweet Chariot Music Festival?
I don't. Is that here in Maine?
It actually takes place on Swan's Island, it's a music and art festival that lasts about a week. And I don't know if you know where Swan's Island is.
Is it off South Acadia? Dakota.
Yeah, it's off Acadia near Mount Desert. It's a 40-minute ferry ride to get there. And that's also a thriving force of my life, the music that I've listened, discovering old-time music and folkloric musicians that became part of my family over time was very important. And I was always traveling through Portland ever since I was coming to Maine for the summers, and I always dreamed of establishing my production company here in this city by the sea, to quote Longfellow, and a song that I think we're going to hear at the end of this program, that was sung actually by one of my dearest friend that I met on Swan's Island, a poet and musician and folklorist by the name of Dylan Boston, who actually brought Longfellow's poem about Portland to life in this song. It's called My Lost Youth, and it's a great piece written from the perspective of Longfellow remembering his childhood in Portland.
Yeah, that's great. We'll put that on at the end of the show so listeners can hear just what you mean.
Yeah, thank you.
So was it hard to leave your health care behind when you moved to Maine? And what year did you arrive here to live in Portland?
It was 3.5 years ago, so what would that be, 2011, 2012, mm-hmm. pretty much. Well, actually, yes, it was challenging and very expensive, and I anticipated this. When I was in Africa, had a couple of injuries and had to be, you know, repatriated to France. And I've always been very careful and aware of the importance of healthcare. And especially because I believe in integrative health and alternative medicine. And for example, you know that homeopathy is reimbursed in France and since decades. And in the U.S., I believe there is a movement toward alternative ways of healing the body and the mind. And Maine has a very, very dynamic integrative health culture with talented physicians and practitioners. And we don't have to blush or envy, you know, Boston or New York, really. I've discovered that. And I'm actually also very fond of a group called the Center of Wellness Leadership, which is a not-for-profit raising awareness around integrative health systems and complementary and alternative medicine here in Portland. I don't know if you know about it, Kate. But it's an organization that opens the importance of understanding that there are alternative ways to heal through nutrition and mind-body medicine and meditations and Ayurvedic or acupuncture, all sorts of modalities. I personally believe that the pharmaceutical system is an old model, and we don't cure people with pills anymore. The allopathic pharmaceutical is now against natural medicine and homeopathy and mind-body therapy. It's a new era that's opening in health, and a fascinating period for all of us as we are aging longer, you know, and better, hopefully.
And wanting to live well. I think the real trick next is to get it reimbursed so everyone has access.
Absolutely.
That's what I'd like to see.
Me too.
Yeah. So you're listening to WMPG, and if you're just joining us, welcome. This is New Mainers Speak, and I'm Kate Manahan. My guest today is Albin Maynon. And Albin has a career in film production, and you can connect with many of his projects through his blog, and we'll give you details for hooking up with that in a moment. But today you're here in part to tell us about your current project called Memory Lane. Can you explain to listeners just what this is all about?
Yes, I mentioned, you know, my early life in Lagos, Nigeria. And as an expatriate, you know, we would never go out at night. It was too dangerous. So we would go out to dinner at each other's house. And one of the really strong memories of my childhood was the noise of that 35 millimeter film projector under which I would sit every week almost as a kid amongst 20 or 30 friends of my parents. And together on Saturday nights, we would travel in the magical world of cinematography with cigarette smokes hanging at the time and the sound that created that unique ambience. And I knew I would work in the dreaming industry at that point. And this is what I did. I became a filmmaker. And very early on in my career, I was interested. I lost my brother when he was 17 years old and got really interested in palliative care and how we could help people with integrative medicine. And about 5 years ago, my grandmother, Rosette, and this is a good segue for, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease and dementia. And the reason why I also was excited to come to your show and was not to talk about my small experience as an esprit voyageur, but more than that, to talk about this collaborative project I launched a few years ago to help people affected by dementia and Alzheimer's disease, to help essentially the families and the caregivers. So when she was diagnosed, I decided to do something to make her dream, to make her laugh again, to help her travel in time and fight the slow degenerescence of her mind as the disease progressed. I'm sure lots of us are familiar with that already. You know, we're all concerned in some ways. And I created Memory Lane TV. And for the past 5 years, together with a committee of geriatric physicians and therapists and filmmakers and musicians from all over the world, we've developed and researched a way to use media and guided imagery and using also music and sound and even olfactory stimulation. We put, you know, scent in the environment to awaken the souvenirs and memories of people living with dementia. So it's like, to describe it, you know, it's like a plot-free, multi-sensory video on demand therapeutic series of film to help people dream. We're taking them into a traveling capsule. I like to refer that as a traveling capsule, making them laugh and smell, see and dream with the help of a screen and new media. For example, we wake them up in the morning with the sound of birds. and we help them to go to sleep at night with sunsets, and we recapture some of those precious memories that make so much of who we are. And we've discovered, I could go on and on about this, we discovered that stimulating the senses and improves incredibly the quality of life, and having an impact on some of the symptoms of the disease by releasing the stress, the agitation, being able to remove some of the anxiety, and actually helping also the families to reconnect with their loved one by being mindful and living in the present moment, being really present when they're exchanging through that medium. I always, emphasize the fact that dementia is way beyond an epidemic. If it was an economy, it would be the 18th largest in the world. And people need to understand that there is no cure for this disease. And we know that one out of three of us will be affected. So we're all concerned. And this is, we don't have any claim to actually, cure the disease itself, but this therapeutic system is a means to quiet the pain and to recapture some of those precious moments.
What you were saying about waking people up with the birds and putting them to sleep with the sunset, I just love how that helps people to stay oriented. I understand that there's sundowning with dementia patients and people with Alzheimer's, where you get a little disoriented at certain times of day. And I imagine that would feel comforting and kind of those tap into the older memories of things they do understand and have access to help them stay oriented as best as possible.
Yeah, we've developed 8 to 10 different types of what I call sessions and dream scenes, and the circadian alignment for people because they wake up in the middle of the night, they don't know if it's time to eat, or in the middle of the day, we really have to help them to find temporal references. And this is one of the things that we've been working on, is how can we easily, through music and sound and guided imagery, help people very simply to know what time of the day it is. And this is one of the program, but in the afternoon we also do storytelling. We tap into occupational therapy by providing the nurses and the people tools that are interactive. So it's very difficult to, as the disease progresses, to talk and communicate and relate to the person that you're seeing slowly disappearing. But there are ways. There are incredible ways, because people always make the analogy of, it's like, they're going back into their childhood and they're reacting like they're a kid. And I always say, no, they have an amazing history. They've been through families and had kids, and sometimes went to war and had so many different jobs, and it's all there. It's all there, and we can tap into that memories by reactivating and going through a reviviscence. What I call the reviviscence is the second stage of a reminiscence. It's actually when you relive the emotion of a souvenir, of a memory. So the first stage, by remembering a song, would be remembering the words and feeling good. But because of the retrograde amnesia and the characteristic of that disease, we can actually not only reminisce with the song, but making them relive the exact emotion. That's beautiful to witness, people reliving their emotion. I get the shivers when I think about everything that I've seen in the department happening.
This is a really big idea, and I love that it's built on love for your grandmother and the beauty of our human lives. It's far-reaching, and I imagine that it's wonderful for the care providers to share some of these things with the people watching the segments.
I always I think it's even more important for the caregivers. I call them even care partners, because they're really who are suffering from what's happening in their daily life and working so hard and don't have any time in the break. And again, they don't know how to communicate. And what's good for us, going out and listening to birds and seeing a sunset on the beautiful coast of Maine, is good for them. It's even more important for them. But it's a way for us all to communicate and relieve some of the tension. It's like sort of a passive meditation, really easy to do, but they're not only images of nature. We tap into on memory lane, for example, you first fill up a questionnaire, and I will know where you were born, what type of music you were listening. If you were born in the 40s and on the coast of Maine, then we'll just customize everything everything so that your personal memory will tap into our image data bank and sound data bank, and you can even upload your own music. And so we create something that's very personalized for each person and each family members as well.
Wow. I love that. So if my father were suffering from early stages of dementia, I would contact you and fill out this form, and then you custom make something for my father?
Well, yes, we build an algorithm. You wouldn't contact me personally, although I am most of the time there, but you would go on to memory-lane.tv, register the questionnaire, and then there's always someone that puts and works with the algorithm. You know, we have a huge database of content, and then I would, after you fill up the, it takes 15 to 20 minutes to fill up the questionnaire, and then I would customize, yeah, content for it.
I love it. I think that's going to take off, Adlan.
Well, I hope so.
So you were quite poetic when you talked about your work as a producer, using a teamwork approach with writing and planning and editing, marketing, and I think producing is a big project management kind of field. Can you highlight some other film projects you've worked on in the past?
Yes, I started working on documentary project in the early 90s when I was a young PA, a production assistant, in a documentary production working essentially on travel and geopolitical documentaries. So I started documenting the world and helping film directors and director of photography, the DPs, the sound engineers to create their vision. And I love this job so much that I made it my own. And being a film maker, a film producer, is essentially knowing and learning how to delegate and identify talents and let them do what they do the best. So I don't do much, really.
It's kind of like you're the director of an orchestra. Yeah, right? Bring up the violins.
That's right. And it's much easier, you know. It's much easier than writing a book. You just let everyone do. And you can do so many. We used to produce 2 to 3 documentaries per year. And France has an incredible system because right after World War II, cinematography and documentary film writing and all sorts of media were subsidized and still are. So this is why our industry in France is still alive. So we could produce things that were not necessarily commercially livable. And so you mentioned a couple of projects. If I were to probably mention two of them, the first one would be Ikiza, Unity and Ethnic War in Burundi, that we produced in 1993, right when the second genocide in Burundi happened, where we highlighted how, again, that war and the genocide was perpetrated by the influence of colonialism, dividing ethnies. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Hutus and the Tutsis and everything that happened there. And it's dear to my heart because we have a strong community of people here in Portland from Burundi, from Bujumbura, and Rwanda as well. And most of them are highly educated people who had to flee from their countries that are sometimes still at war. So there is a place in my heart when I meet them in Portland and when we talk, you know, French together. It really warms, and I've seen the shift, and I think it's such a wealth for our town as well. They have incredible stories to tell, and I think some of them you told in your wonderful show. We worked on projects like that. Another documentary, since you asked me a couple of that were important, would be a Voyageur 1608. It's something that I worked on a few years ago with a friend director, a friend of mine called Jean Dulon. And this is a funny project. He was dressed up as a French voyageur from the 17th century. And
I like it already.
Yeah. And from the glacial winds of Louisbourg in Nova Scotia, where they have an incredible reenactment. If you've never been to Louisbourg, you should go. We don't have time to tell the story, but we started in Louisbourg, where he wakes up on the shore and then realized that the reenactment is only a play, and that French people have disappeared. And he walks all the way to the Gulf of Mexico through Terre-Neuve and Louisiana, and finds his Franco-American roots. I'm sorry, as he travels in time. So it's what we call a docu-fiction. It's a half fiction, half documentary, and it's filmed as an historical documentary, mixing the past and the present in a narrative form. And this is what I loved about documentaries. You know, we went on the road for almost 10,000 miles and search for a pass in the past of the traces of La Nouvelle France in Northern America that started actually here in Acadia when the French were present. And at the time, very few people know that. But almost one-third of the continent through what was called the Alliance Autochtone, the French alliance, the friendship that we developed, the French people developed with the first nation on the continent, the French were present. So that character was an historian and a journalist and dressed up. He became a coureur des bois and retraces the step of an odyssey that to this day is still untold. You know, it's the most extraordinary untold story about the French presence that went on as we walked the land. Yeah.
And can listeners link to that on your blog?
Yeah, sometimes I have a blog that I don't maintain very often, but this is one of the things that you can look at. I think I put, you know, a short version of it. Yeah.
Okay, great. How would they find your blog?
It's espritvoyageur.net. I think you should link it because I am not good at spelling things.
I will. I will definitely do that. Yeah. So very quickly, could you give me a sense of what your dreams are regarding Memory Lane and its future?
Yes. You know, there are 37,000 people in Maine that are affected by Alzheimer's. And my dream is that one day they all have access to a tool that would help them dream, help them feel better, you know, recall their favorite song, their favorite smell, and through a very simple interaction. And it's only feasible that if we all walk in the same direction, if out there, you know, we all make this happen. I believe America is the place where things can happen from a dream, you know, a place where great things happen. We don't need to make it great again. It's great already, I think. Not perfect, but great. So I think if we all do it together, there are ways, and we could make Memory Lane available all over Maine, later all over New England, and then all over the States, and eventually to the world. It's this very simple digital project, and hopefully one day we won't need it, and technology is here to stay.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Thank you, Amon. Mm. Amon, you are a person who is quite reflective, and you speak very eloquently about your experience of having multiple homes in your heart simultaneously. You seem to live your life with an unusual passion and focus, and in the process, you are artfully expressing your insights through film while striving to bring greater awareness and compassion to the world. This has been such a pleasure. Thank you for being willing to come in today and share your life and your work with me.
Thank you, Kate, for having me.
I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Albon Minot. Would you be so kind as to quickly introduce the song you have chosen for today? You mentioned it earlier, so it's Dylan Boston's My Lost Youth,
yes.
A reworked poem by Longfellow?
Correct. Dylan is a contemporary folklorist from Massachusetts who puts the words of Longfellow in melody. And I love this song. It's a great perspective of Longfellow remembering his childhood of Portland, again, Memory Lane, you know. And this is one of the many songs coming from an album called American Renaissance, where Dylan explores the poetry of Thoreau and Whitman and Dickinson, Halcott and Emerson, and put their literature in the most enchanted melody. So I highly recommend it. Dylan is on iTunes. You can find it. It's Willow of the Wilderness.
Wonderful. Thanks.
By the sea, often in thought I go up and down the pleasant streets of that dear old town, and my youth comes back to me, and a verse of a Lapland song haunts my memory still. A boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. I remember the black wharves and the slips and the sea tides tossing free, Spanish sailors with bearded lips, all the mystery of the ships and the magic of the sea, and the voice of that wayward song is singing and saying still, a boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. I remember the gleams and the glooms that dart across a schoolboy's brain, the songs in the silence of the heart that in part are prophecies and in part are longings wild and vain, and the voice of that fitful song sings and is never still. A boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. Strange to me now are the faces I meet when I visit in that town. But the native air is pure and sweet, and the trees that shadow each well-known street as they balance up and down are singing that same song. Sighing and whispering still, a boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. Often I think of that beautiful town.